know, I just fell down. I blacked out, fell down. And when I woke up, it's a pool of blood on the floor. Pretty sure my nose is broken, but.
All of that occurred away from the action, and Gene Katie just a little upset with what's happened so far.
Robinson around Ostertag.
Down again is Jawan Johnson, 3-for-3 from the field.
You're listening to the Purdue Basketball Beat, a part of the Boiled Sports Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Purdue Basketball Beat. With me is Anish. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Rest in peace. Rest in peace to Andy, by the way.
For the third week in a row, rest in peace to Andy.
Yeah.
We've got a special guest on today in honor of Purdue IU Week. We have Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on board. It's a great week, I guess, for IU and Purdue fans, even though this is the only time that the two teams play this year. And it's a little bit later than normal, I think, this matchup. But everyone's really excited. So we're really happy to have you on and to talk about the game. So you went to IU, right? Not originally from the area?
No, I went to IU from 2005 to 2009, but I actually came up, I grew up in Atlanta, and to be honest, people always ask me, like, how'd you wind up here? I like the big state school feel, just, you know, like the whole atmosphere of a campus like that. I kind of knew I wanted to do this. Do journalism, so I wanted to go somewhere that had a strong presence for that, but I just didn't want to go to the University of Georgia. Atlanta's only about an 8.5-hour drive from my house, and yeah. Certainly from Indy, I can get tickets, plane tickets pretty cheap if I plan out in advance. So, I mean, it's not like I'm on the other side of the country or anything, and then, you know, you meet a girl, you get a job, suffer through the winters, and here you are, so...
That Georgia comment is funny. I've got my brother-in-law is an engineer, and he grew up in Indiana, and he was like, well, my two choices are Purdue and Rose Holman, and I guess that means I'm going to Rose Holman.
Well, this is the time where I guess I try to win brownie points with Purdue fans. My grandfather graduated from Purdue.
There you go. He went there.
He grew up in Seymour, and he went on the GI Bill after World War II, and then worked for Lockheed Martin basically his whole life. So,
yeah,
that's really cool.
I don't know how he would feel about me having gone to Indiana. I don't know if he was rolling over in his grave or if he even cared that much. But
I think a lot of families in Indiana are like that. My grandma is a huge IU fan, actually a huge Bob Knight fan. Like, she mysteriously became a big Texas Tech fan after he took the job there. But she would put on, oh my gosh, like, she would try so hard to pretend like she liked Purdue just as much. But it was very transparent that Gene Keady, as she called him, just didn't hold the candle to Bob Knight. So did you work for the Indianapolis Star right out of school, or did you work for some other papers?
I actually started as a freelancer because the business was hit hard by the recession in 09, 08, 09, just that general area. So I actually spent my first year out of college covering Notre Dame and then actually later Purdue. I covered that Robbie Hummel team, which I maintain to this day would have gone to the Final Four had it held up.
You completely won over Purdue fans now.
Thanks, Zach.
No, I mean it. I mean, I will always say the best college basketball team I've ever covered in person is 2012 Kentucky. And yeah. No offense, but it's not close. That team was a buzzsaw. 13 Indiana and 2010 Purdue are both really high up there, though.
Yeah.
I guess last year's Wisconsin team probably, too. But I loved watching that. I was at the Michigan State Purdue game in East Lansing. Would have been in like mid late. It was right before Hummel got hurt, and it was one of the best regular season basketball games I've ever covered. And I drove through literally a blizzard to get there. I was living in northern Indiana. My wife did have a full time job at a paper in Elkhart, Indiana, and
really,
it dropped. I drove. It was about a 2.5-hour drive, give or take, from our apartment to East Lansing, and it took 4 hours each way. And I left, it was like a 9 o'clock game. I left at, I think, 3 in the afternoon, maybe even earlier, and I got back at like 4 o'clock the next morning. So So that's how badly I wanted to do this. Then I went to graduate school and then just kind of kept picking up gigs covering IU. I mean, I did it for the student paper, mm-hmm. and then I did it for a website called Inside the Hall, and then 24/7 Sports started an IU site, and they signed me on, and then the Star found me in 2013, and here I am. So it really literally is meet a girl, get a job,
and work it.
It worked out well, though. I mean, like, that's a good gig covering the IU as an IU grad in Indianapolis, like, for the Star is a good gig.
Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, we actually live in Bloomington. She works for the university, and I always try to maintain a healthy level of separation from IU just for purposes of objectivity. I'm happy to take their health insurance, though. It's fantastic. It is unbelievable. And, you know, I don't know. I don't mind Indy, but Bloomington's not a bad place to spend some time. Plus, like, just an expat southerner, like, the further south, even if it's an hour closer to the equator, I'll take it. I mean, yeah. It was 50 here today, and it's going to be 60 on Saturday, so.
That's not bad. It's going to be real beautiful. I mean, that's almost like tailgate weather.
Yeah. I mean, I actually know some people that are probably going to be tailgating.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that'll be real nice.
Half the South parking lot's torn up for Assembly Hall renovation, but hey, come on down. I'm sure they wouldn't begrudge anybody putting up tents and lighting up crock pots. So
we'd probably have to hide the Purdue stuff. Sure how welcome of a reception.
IU would still probably take your parking money. Something tells me.
IU would take my parking money, and then IU fans would take my crock pot.
Depending on what was in it. I mean, if you're willing to.
I guess that's true. Well, so the game on Saturday, I think both Purdue and IU fans are really looking forward to this game. There's a lot at stake for both teams. You know, we're getting kind of late in the season. Both teams are top 25. IU has a chance at winning the Big Ten regular season title. Purdue's looking for seeding in the tournament. What's sort of at stake for IU in this game?
I mean, kind of everything, honestly. And I don't say that, you know, seeking hyperbole. I mean, if Indiana wins out, Indiana wins the Big Ten outright because they still play Iowa and they still play Maryland. So technically and obviously, look, I mean, it's Purdue at Illinois, at Iowa, Maryland. You would figure there's at least one loss in there somewhere. But they do control their destiny in that respect. If they win all four games, they win the Big Ten outright. At the same time, you know, just in general, even if they want to share the title, you would have to imagine they're going to need to hold serve at home, even though it is Purdue and Maryland. It's hardly the easiest run in at home. You know, they're undefeated in Assembly Hall this year. In fact, so are the women. So I don't know if that's ever happened, that IU men and women have gone undefeated totally at Assembly Hall in the same season. But anyway, I mean, you know, there's very much that feeling of wanting to protect their home court and all that. And then, you know, the other thing, and not trying to start fires when I say this, Tom Crean has never beaten Purdue on a team that didn't have Cody Zeller, with a team that did not have Cody Zeller. And it's not like Cody Zeller's the linchpin.
Right.
So much of that kind of speaks to the peaks and valleys of his program in the last 5 or 6 years. That
those teams were really good with him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in the seasons, he's beaten Purdue in seasons that I think his fans would qualify as successful. He's not really beaten Purdue in seasons where I think his fans would qualify as varying levels of disappointment. And there's always been different reasons for that. But one way or the other, this game has always kind of served as a barometer for Indiana of, you know, where they stand in the Big Ten and where they stand in the conference title picture and all that. Trying to put one hand on the league title, or at least a share of the league title, Indiana loses at home to Purdue. Obviously, for a coach whose fans have some questions about him already, that would not be a great look. On the other hand, I guess beating Purdue at home to inch closer to a Big Ten title would be very good for Indiana. So, and for Tom Crean. So, I mean, I don't really mean to be casting hyperbole when I say really everything is kind of at stake for Indiana Saturday night.
I'm really struck by the differences between these two teams. IU has done a really good job this season of sort of matching the trend, at least in the NBA, of either you shoot a three or you get a layup, right? Like, I think against Nebraska, I was looking, most of their shots were either layups, dunks, or three-point attempts, right? Well, as Purdue is, plays that old traditional, throw it into the big, you know, motion offense. Even the coaches are very different from a personality standpoint. But going back to that, so it really comes down to strength versus strength. Last year, things broke in Purdue's favor for those games. And this year, it sort of looks the same, but there are enough differences. What do you see those differences are that might give IU an advantage this year that they didn't have last year?
I think the big thing is whether or not IU can get enough production from its big men to just occupy. Because, I mean, and this is kind of simplifying it, admittedly, but if I could explain it in detail, I'd be a coach, not a reporter. Last year, Purdue had a lot of success by essentially, I mean, because Indiana did not have consistent big man play last year. Everybody kind of knows that. One of the things they tried to do was put, like, Colin Hartman at the five and basically say, okay, well, we're going to give up the size battle, but you're going to have to come out and guard a center who's also a three-point shooter and that kind of thing. And it worked against some teams. It worked magic against Maryland. But when they played Purdue, Purdue just kind of camped either Hammonds or Haas out under the basket and said, you know, there is no defensive 3 seconds, so you're going to have to shoot over one of these guys. And that let perimeter defenders, Davis, Octius, Edwards, whoever, play really up into the body of Indiana's guards. And you didn't see, and again, this is kind of simplifying, but there really wasn't switching. There wasn't a lot of helping. If a guy lost, you know, if a guy lost his man on the dribble drive, because Indiana wants to go through the paint. That's what Tom Green talks about. And that doesn't necessarily mean drive to the paint and kick. It doesn't always mean, you know, dump down into the paint and back out to a big man. It just means the ball needs to touch the paint so it can come back out. But Purdue last year did not really collapse with that. There wasn't helping. There wasn't sort of this, like, let's collapse in on the driver, because they said, let Yogi Ferrell attack the rim. A.J. Hammonds is there. You stay with your man and don't give Yogi Ferrell the kick out that then starts the ball moving around the perimeter and then leads to the open shot on the wing or in the corner or the backdoor cutter coming in. Troy Williams is very good at that for an easy layup or dunk. Purdue was just able to basically say, We're gonna take away the rim just on our sheer size advantage, and you're gonna have to shoot over us because we're gonna play straight into your body on the perimeter. And what that led to as the game went on was you started to see, I mean, Indiana's offense, not to get too deep into it, but it's very, very much predicated on court spacing and guys being in positions on the floor where they're not necessarily gonna shoot every time they touch the ball, but if they get the ball and they're open, they're on a spot on the floor where they are ready to shoot and they're in a good position to shoot, a good spot. You started to see, instead of those guys arranging themselves at 19 and a half, 20 feet, all of a sudden it was 21 feet, then 22 feet. They were trying to back off of that pressure just to get some room, and it just totally took them out of their offense. Obviously, Indiana is going to have to hit shots. Yogi Ferrell's 10 of 42 in his last four games, so he's going to have to get his shot going again, at least to some degree. I mean, they don't need him to score 20 points a night like they did in January, but he needs to start hitting again. But I think the biggest thing is, can Thomas Bryant and Max Bielfeldt, and to a lesser degree maybe those freshmen, Morgan and Anunoby, do enough to occupy whoever is defending the rim to say, you can't just stand there with your hands up because Yogi Ferrell's just going to reach around you and hand it off to Thomas Bryant for a dunk. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I would imagine Purdue is going to have wrinkles in place to deal with that as well. But that's the big thing for me when I think about last season and just the overriding memories I have of the way Purdue was able to defend Indiana, frankly, the way nobody else really was, because of that size advantage and also because Purdue's got some superb perimeter defenders, as you guys well know. Mm-hmm. Indiana's got to be able to do something to kind of deaden that defensive rim presence as much as they can.
What about Purdue's matchup does Yogi seem to always exploit? What do you think, like, why do you think he always seems to have, just like A.J. Hammonds always seems to have successful games against IU, like, what part of Purdue's scheme does Yogi Ferrell seem to have a lot of success against?
You know, I mean, and I'm trying to remember, and I can even pull up the stats. I do remember at least one of those games he had to take a lot of shots to get those points. So it was kind of a question. You talk about the whole NBA idea of basically just inefficiency. But, I mean, I think at one level, I do think, yeah, I mean, he took 20 shots to get 21 points in the game in West Lafayette. He took 15 shots to get 21 points in the game in Bloomington. So, I mean, it certainly wasn't like Purdue. Purdue made him work for a lot of points, made him eat up a lot of possessions to get his points. I do think that Yogi really enjoys this game. I mean, I think the whole in-state thing very much appeals to him. And he knows a lot of those guys. I mean, he knows Rafael Davis. He knows, at least to some extent, P.J. Thompson. And he's also just, and I know this is really lame to say, he's just he's a really good player. I mean, he has turned into a very, very good point guard. But I do think at the same time, like I said, I mean, the game in West Lafayette was the one I remembered a lot. I mean, he was 9 of 20 in that game. So yeah. You give up 21 points, but he's 9 of 20. He's 1 of 6 from behind the arc. I'm literally reading his stats right here. And he only has 3 assists. I mean, that is, honestly, a pretty good day defensively against Yogi Ferrell. It's a little bit like if you go back and look at what Indiana did with Trey Burke the year they won the Big Ten title. Burke scored like 49 points against him that year, but he did it on something like 49 shots. Mm-hmm. And so it's like he's not bringing his teammates into the game. He's not really letting the offense flow. He's having to work extra hard to get his points. And not to compare Yogi Ferrell to like Trey Burke directly, but if you get that kind of, if you make him shoot that kind of volume, then you're probably going to have a good day against him because those are possessions where he's not, it's Yogi's job as much to get his points as it is to like put other guys in the right spots and do something that, I mean, he to use a soccer reference, he feels a little bit like someone like Leo Messi or something that he understands how to draw a defender to him so that it opens somebody else up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he's obviously not that good. I mean, nobody's as good as Messi. Yeah.
I understood that. But I thought the Burke, I think the Trey Burke comparison's fair. I think it's very fair. I think they're both undersized point guards who very offensively dominant, but also have a very good eye for playmaking. I think that's a fair comparison. Like Yogi obviously didn't have Burke's or hasn't had Burke's peaks yet, but I do think that that's pretty fair.
And like I said, I think the key is just if you can get him inefficient and not let him, you know, I mean, against Iowa, I think he had like 9 points or 11 points, but he also had 7 assists. So, okay, you're not holding him to whatever, but that's, you held him to 11 points or whatever he had, but there's, what, maybe another 18, 20 points he created? If you make him take a lot of shots, not let him create a lot of shots, then you're doing a good job however many points he scores.
It seems like IU is doing a lot better job this year rebounding than they did last year. I think they're second in the conference in defensive rebounding percentage or something like that. That seems like a big change from last year. And is that attributed to the new freshman? And does that sort of take care of some of those worries with Yogi shooting too much, or if the shots don't fall, can they extend possessions by getting those offensive rebounds?
I mean, I think it is somewhat that, I mean, you bring in Thomas Bryant, who's a very good rebounder. I mean, you look at his percentage is 12.1 on the offensive end, 17 on the defensive end. You also bring in Max Bielfeldt, who's been very, very good for this team. I mean, you know, has been, I thought he was a really good pickup when they managed to kind of stumble into him in May. But he's been even better than I thought he'd be. I mean, he was like the lone bright spot. He basically won the Rutgers game. He was the lone bright spot last weekend in East Lansing. He had a double-double and obviously an otherwise very forgettable day for Indiana against Michigan State. I think some of it, too, is a little bit of this team remembering last year and how creative it had to be trying to rebound the ball with, you know, frankly, just, I mean, lineups packed with guards, and you'd have, like, Colin Hartman basically just trying to box out a lane. Like, rather than going for the rebound, he was trying to basically create a rebounding lane for a guard. Because, A, that's sometimes the best you can do, and B, because that is worth more for Indiana if Yogi Ferrell grabs the rebound because the break starts immediately, whereas if Colin Hartman grabs the rebound, the break starts when Colin Hartman finds Yogi Ferrell or Robert Johnson. So I think it's a little bit of both of those. And then the other thing is, I mean, you know, if you're Indiana, you talked a little bit about they take kind of two kinds of shots. And so you've got a lot of layup attempts or a lot of sort of in-close attempts. You got a lot of three-pointers. They're a very, very efficient team, so there's not a lot of rebound opportunities anyway, or at least not relative to whatever the mean is. And if you're taking threes, you can count on some long rebounds. If you're taking a lot of layups, or if you're shooting a lot of layups, you can count on one or two guys and maybe getting putback attempts. I think it's kind of a combination of all three of those.
Are you expecting to see a Caleb Swanigan, Troy Williams matchup?
I think it's possible. Maybe more if Swanigan can defend Williams. My guess is that you're going to see more of. I'm curious to see how Indiana starts. They've started Hartman since James Blackman got hurt, mm-hmm. except for the Michigan State game where they started Bielefeld, largely because Michigan State had Costello and Deontay Davis. And obviously, it's not apples to apples, but a Hammond-Swanigan front line. I could see that kind of pulling the same lineup out of Tom Crean. I think you'll see more Hartman and more Bielefeld, more Anunoby and Juwan Morgan probably than Troy Williams. Frankly, they're all just better defenders than Troy Williams. And also because you rotate four guys on a player like that that can hurt you in a few different ways when he's playing well, maybe nobody really gets in foul trouble. That is, they've had mixed results with that this year. Hartman's had some foul trouble, but I don't know. I mean, you guys would be able to speak better to whether or not you think Swanigan can really defend Williams, but my guess is you'll see more of the Hartman, Morgan, and Anunoby group on Swanigan.
Well, so there are two things that I wanted to touch on there. One about Anunoby, but first the Blackman injury. A lot of people have said that has somehow made IU a better team. I don't understand this, because Blackman's a fantastic player. He's a tremendous player. And I do think that there is an element that is missing. But Tom Crean, to his credit, and we make fun of him a lot, but to Tom Crean's credit, he's a brilliant offensive coach. I think he's a very good college offensive coach, and he's made he's created opportunities for other people. So why do you think that there's this sentiment out there that IU is somehow better without Blackman?
I think a lot of it comes down to defense. Indiana was horrendous defensively last year. I mean, they were outside the KenPom top 200 in efficiency. It was really, really rough to watch at times. And they weren't a lot better early in the non-conference season. And the two guys that I think really kind of became whipping boys for that were Blackman and Troy Williams. And I'm not saying that either of those players is wildly underrated defensively. They both have their deficiencies there. I will never argue that. There's this infamous clip of Matt Jones like wide open in the corner in the game at Duke, and I remember this in real time, and Blackman's running out to close him down, and Jones has got the ball, and he's wide open. And for whatever reason, Blackman gets within a couple steps of him and then starts running toward the player on the wing.
Yeah.
It's like, I remember it's like, that. I get what you're trying to do, but Matt Jones wouldn't be a Duke basketball player if he was not a great three-point shooter. And you could be a step closer to him, and he's still taking this shot. Truthfully, the defensive improvement started before Blackman got hurt. I think that in a lot of ways, it's kind of one of those fan scapegoat situations. And I've said this before. I don't think Indiana's a better team without James Blackman. I think they're a different team without James Blackman. I think that this team did benefit from, you know, as much as I think you're right to talk about Tom Crean's ability to coach these offenses, at times maybe when you had like Blackman and Troy Williams and Yogi Ferrell and Thomas Bryant all on the floor, it was a little bit hard. You felt like you almost needed two balls because everybody needed to be involved. It wasn't even that everybody was selfish, but that guys, you know, I mean, scorers need to be involved to feel like they're at their best. And if they're not getting shots or if they're not making shots, then that's going to leak over into other parts of their games. It's a natural part of college basketball. And I think this team did benefit a little bit when it just kind of became, when Blackman got hurt, it very much just sort of, Indiana just said, all right, this is Yogi Ferrell's team. At both ends of the floor, in the locker room, in the huddle, and you've seen guys talk even more than, I mean, he's been a leader for 2+ years now, but you've seen guys talk even more this year about Yogi is leading us in practice. Yogi is running huddles during games. He's the one making adjustments. He's recommending substitutions. He's, you know, guys talk about a different fire, hunger, whatever, all that senior stuff that you always hear. I think that's really where Indiana's improved. And maybe also, to some degree, I think Indiana beforehand probably, and I don't think Tom Crean would ever admit this, but I think at some level Indiana said before James Blackman got hurt, the thing that makes us elite is our offense. You know, like when we're rolling on offense, we can't be stopped by anybody in the country. That's what's going to win us things. And then you take out their second leading scorer, maybe one of the best pure scorers in the Big Ten. And I think maybe guys looked around a little bit and said, all right, we can't win that way anymore. We can't just count on being this we can still hit shots, and Yogi's a great point guard and all that, but we can't count on being this potentially devastatingly efficient offensive team. We better really work on how to win games by maybe cracking down a little bit more on defense, being a little bit more alert on the boards, getting to the free throw line a little bit more often. I do patently reject the idea that Indiana's a better team without James Blackman. I just think they're a different team, a team that maybe had to do some self-evaluation after a really rocky non-conference season to begin with and kind of say, all right, you know, it's now our backs are up against the wall and we're either going to figure this out or we're really going to just fall apart.
The second question I had was Anunoby. Is he the greatest player in college basketball history all of a sudden?
I know, and not to give away private conversations, it's not like I have a ton of them with Tom Crean, but I remember him talking about Anunoby as a recruit before he signed, so he couldn't talk publicly, but he saw some of this in him. I mean, he genuinely, and I tend to trust Tom when he does. I mean, the Oladipos, the Dwayne Wades, that I tend to trust him when he sees these guys that are kind of moldable and multi-positional, and he just sort of, they're raw, and he has an idea of how to get stuff out of them. I did not think he'd be anywhere near what he's been. The new is Indiana better without James Blackman question is, should OG Anunoby start over Troy Williams? I also patently reject that idea. I understand why people get frustrated with Troy Williams, but there are a half dozen reasons why that would, I think, be a really, really bad idea at this point in the season in particular. But he is. I mean, he's a player that he makes the most of his minutes for a guy that only plays about 12 a game. He is. I mean, I do wonder sometimes, are Indiana fans in love with him because he doesn't play enough to make a lot of mistakes? Yes. But you see that with freshmen everywhere. You know, I mean, the fans see freshmen and they think, oh, he's going to be great. It's a little bit of that backup quarterback syndrome. The backup quarterback's never thrown a game defining interception. I think
Purdue's has. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, IU's has, to be fair, in the not so distant past. But I think he's going to be a really good player. I think he's in the perfect role for himself right now. And you know, if you want to know why Indiana's a better team statistically since Blackman got hurt, it's because a guy, or a couple guys, if you throw in Juwan Morgan, that I don't think anybody expected to be able to step up the way they have in Big Ten play, and Morgan and Anunoby really, really did. And that has nothing to do with James Blackman, like nothing.
One, maybe a guy who was impacted by James Blackman was Robert Johnson, who saw his minutes per game go up by over 6 minutes after James Blackman Jr. got hurt. What has his development been like? It seems like with maybe getting him in more, you're trading offense for defense. What has his development over the season been like?
You know, I mean, I'm sneaking a look at the KenPom numbers while I'm talking about this, just so I don't talk out of my butt. But he's shooting the three ball better, and he was a pretty decent three-point shooter who pretty clearly just kind of hit the freshman wall at the end of last season. He also had, and Tom Crean wouldn't say what it was, but I think it might have been an ankle or a some kind of leg problem that he was dealing with for a lot of for a lot of the non-conference season. Honestly, if you look at a lot of his percentages in Big Ten play, he's turning the ball over more than he was in the season overall. He's shooting the three ball a lot more poorly than he was in the season, or is in the season overall. He's been a better player, and I think he's definitely become – he has allowed Indiana to be more creative. If you go back again to that trade, the way that we were talking about Trey Burke, the way they defended Burke, if you go back and look at those games in 2013, people think that Oladipo just, like, shut Burke down. They actually barely defended Burke with Oladipo in both of those games. What they did was they threw almost everybody else at Burke. And then in the last 5 minutes, Oladipo was essentially fresh and just closed him down. Burke was exhausted because everybody was just hacking him and bumping him and doing whatever they could. And then in the last 5 minutes, Oladipo was relatively fresh, and he just smothered him. There's no Oladipo-like defender on this team, but Yogi Ferrell can defend very, very well when he is given kind of that sort of role and maybe not expected to score as much and can put a little more energy into defense. I think Robert Johnson allows Indiana to do that somewhat with perimeter players. Obviously, it's got to be a player of the right size. You're not going to defend Caleb Swanigan with Robert Johnson. But I do think he has improved defensively to the point that he's one of those guys that can just eat up minutes defending very good perimeter players on the other team. And then that allows you to keep somebody else off of the, you know, whoever that person is. And then you can close with Yogi Ferrell or Troy Williams or whoever. Probably not Troy Williams. But, you know, Robert Johnson's an interesting one to watch because it's kind of his backcourt next year. Mm-hmm. And he has taken some of the steps forward I think he needs to, and then at the same time some he has not yet. He still turns the ball over way, way too much, for example. I'm really curious to see kind of what he becomes toward the end of the season and certainly getting into next season when it's kind of Robert Johnson replacing Yogi Ferrell.
Troy Williams is really, we touched on him a little bit here and there. He's really devastating on the baseline. And when he's rebounding, it seems like IU wins, right? Like if he's able to like put in that energy on the boards, what has been the source of his such up and down season? It seems he's just been very uneven this year, maybe even more so than last year.
Yeah, I mean, believe me, if I had the answer for that, Tom Crean would be paying me serious cash. I don't know that there's any one thing. I mean, there's a part of me that's kind of come to this belief that this is just sort of who Troy Williams is, that he's always going to be a little bit out of control, and half the time that's going to benefit his team, and the half the time that's going to benefit his opponent. He'll have these stretches where he had one, I think it was Wisconsin, where he turned the ball over, and then like he was frustrated with himself, and he slapped the floor, and his man beats him back down the floor for an easy layup. Then he comes down like two possessions later, splits two defenders, and drops in like a George Gervin finger roll. And then he runs down the floor and blocks the shot. And then he comes down the other end, and he goes for this wild layup that basically almost looks like he threw the ball at the rim. And I don't think it even touched the rim. And it's just kind of like at some point, you know, it is this quest for consistency, and I don't think Tom Crean ever wants him to stop being aggressive and attacking. It's smart. I mean, he can be. You're right. I mean, he's one of the hardest matchups in the league. I don't know that there's an Indiana player or that opposing beat writers mention to me more when they say, like, I don't really know how – Michigan State defends Troy Williams. And my answer is that unfortunately for Indiana, sometimes Troy Williams defends himself. And I just, you know, it's been 2.5 years, and he's certainly improved, don't get me wrong. He has improved demonstrably from his freshman season to his sophomore season and even in some ways to this season. I think he's rebounding the ball better. He's not a volume shooter, but he's definitely got a better jump shot now than he's ever had in his career. Oof. But there's part of me that wonders if he's always just kind of going to be a little bit wild and out of control, and you just kind of hope that you get more of the good than the bad, or that if nothing else, the good maybe just slightly outweighs the bad, or the good comes at the right time, whereas the bad comes at a moment when you can sort of mitigate it. And I don't mean to trash on the kid. I think, like Blackman a little bit, he's become a scapegoat for some of IU's problems when he has struggled, but then you see a game like Michigan State on Sunday when he goes 0-for-5 with 0 points, and what happens to Indiana? Then last night he scored 9 points in 5 minutes against Nebraska with a block, a steal, and an assist. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he can just explode in ways both good and bad for Indiana. And if I had a better explanation for why and how to figure it out, then I'm not sure I'd be doing this for a living.
Do you think he has you think he's a pro? I mean, I don't know about leaving after this year, but do you think he has a shot in the NBA?
A shot, maybe. I mean, he's athletic. I mean, certainly he's got the wingspan. And he's got that energy that in spurts, he looks like a lottery pick. And I mean, he really, really does. He's one time last night, he split two defenders, hit a layup over a third, and drew a foul. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just stuff that, like, no other player in – on. Sorry, those are my dogs. They're downstairs, if you can hear them. They're crazy. But stuff nobody else on his team can do, stuff few other players in the league can do. I think it's a question of whether or not he can ever really just kind of – it feels like the difference between Troy at 98% with 100% being perfect and 102% being borderline disastrous, the margin between 98 and 102 for him is so thin, and he's just kind of constantly straddling that line. If he can land in the right system with the right coach that can maybe just get that out of him, particularly with the way he operates well in offenses that space the floor well, because he's very good at, and Tom Crean calls it, getting lost in the offense, those baseline cuts, the backdoor cuts, things like that. I do think he could be a pro. He'll certainly play a long, healthy career in basketball if he wants it, whether it's at home or abroad. He's very much kind of, for me, one of those, just like right now, one of those very much borderline, I could see two or three GMs falling in love with him and him winding up somewhere. I could see him needing some time in the D-League. But I think he's right on the cut line of being an NBA player in my mind.
What about Yogi?
I think a lot of it's going to come down to, again, I think he'd make a good, like, second or third point guard somewhere, and I think he's going to need time. I think he's going to need time to really adapt to the strength and the speed of the game. I think this year's been big for, again, he's always been a leader, but guys talk about him differently this year. And if you're going to have a point guard that is smaller in the NBA, he needs to bring something. Yeah, I mean, he really needs to bring something just flat out, totally. I think as long as Yogi can shoot well and put up, you know, similar assist and turnover percentages to what he has in college, there's a possibility. And if he can kind of turn himself into just, I'm thinking of like what Tyronn Lue was to those Lakers in the early 2000s, just a guy that can give you like 12, 14 solid minutes. He's not going to screw with chemistry in the clubhouse. He's going to be a professional. He's going to come in and work hard. Because, I mean, honestly, I don't think there's anybody at Indiana that on an individual basis works harder than Yogi Ferrell. I could see it. But he's another one that, for different reasons, I don't think it happens like right away for him. I think he's got to find the right system, the right coach, the right team, and just be patient and carve out a place for himself. I do think it will be harder for him than for Troy Williams, honestly.
You said next year you think that this is going to be Robert Johnson's team. I don't see who on the team kind of takes the reins. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they've also got Josh Newkirk, who's a Pitt transfer, and, you know, I mean, obviously he's not playing this year, but at least he's in the locker room, he's in practices, guys know him. It's not like he's going to be a grad transfer who shows up in June and then... Sure. You know, he's your veteran in October. Nick Zeisloff kind of had to do that last year. But, I mean, it's going to be Johnson, who I think is a pretty strong personality. Colin Hartman, I think, is a player who's very good for any locker room. He's generally a guy that seems, I mean, even going back to recruiting, he was friends with basically everybody Indiana recruited out of Indianapolis. We used to joke among the media that he and Austin Etherington were the social chairs of Indiana's recruiting classes. And then, you know, I mean, Thomas Bryant, if he doesn't make the leap, I think, and I don't have any intel at all on whether or not he's considering it, but I could totally see him going to the NBA after this year for a number of reasons. But if he doesn't, I mean, he is it sounds like weird to say, but he's kind of got the same sort of infectiousness about his personality that Victor Oladipo did. Just that it seems like he can kind of make anybody smile and crack a joke and be serious and yet at the same time never be taking himself too seriously. So I don't think like chemistry will technically be a problem for Indiana next year. It's more just a question of you're going to lose a lot. I mean, at very least, your starting point guard and your top two bench players. And I can make an easy case for you for Troy Williams and or Thomas Bryant, you know, thinking very long and very hard about the NBA as well. And so it's like all the personality and character in the world is not going to put the ball in the basket and is not going to mitigate size disadvantages or is not going to make turn freshmen into juniors by February. So it's going to be an interesting... It could be a very, very sort of rough transition for Indiana from this year to next year, honestly.
How's the recruiting class shaping up?
They've got top 40 forward from Colorado that they've been recruiting since he was in eighth grade. His name's...
Is that Deron Davis?
Yes, thank you. I kept wanting to call him Devontae Green because they committed Danny Green's little brother out of... New York. He's like a three-star guy. I think he's kind of a longer-term developmental guy, but can maybe give him some defensive minutes next year. Grant Gaylon is a kid out of Crown Point that I've seen him a couple times. I think he's just a shooter. You know, I mean, maybe once he gets into a college weight program, you can up his defense or rebounding a little bit, but he's always going to be a shooter first and foremost. And then they've got a kid named Curtis Jones who plays for Huntington Prep, and I think he's in like the 60s or 70s is where he's ranked. Maybe he cracked the top 50 around the time they signed him. A couple people told me they thought he was a little bit underranked, and he's been putting up crazy numbers. He's got like three or four triple doubles this season. But, you know, I mean.
High school staff.
Right, yeah. I mean, like, let's see. And I know if he's at Huntington Prep, he's probably playing pretty difficult, a more difficult schedule than average. But I'd like to see him, you know, just in college, frankly, before I really, because at the same time, I mean, freshmen, by and large, as much as Tom Crean can coach some great offenses, his offenses can also move so fast that freshmen make a lot of mistakes in them at times, too. So, and then you throw in, I guess, technically Newkirk, who is a Pitt transfer. He's going to be a redshirt junior next year. He'll probably, my guess is their starting backcourt is Rob Johnson and Josh Newkirk next season. And I think, you know, if nothing else, maybe a high floor there. I don't know how high the ceiling is, but if nothing else, you're getting a guy who's got 2 years of ACC experience under his belt. So as long as his knee mends the way that they think it will, you know, I think he'll be fine.
Let me, if I can be the millionth person to ask you whether Thon Maker is going to attend IU.
I'll admit I am nowhere near tapped in like some people on that recruitment, and it's a really weird one to begin with. Mm-hmm. It does seem very much like things have faded with IU there. I mean, there was a time where it was really strong, and then it still mentions IU, but there's other schools that come up more often, and I know he's taken some visits recently. None of them have been to IU. At the same time, I'm also, frankly, kind of curious whether or not, whether or not he's even going to go to college. I don't know if that's totally been resolved, but since he is technically a foreign player, he can just go straight into the draft. And I think I do believe that his guardian or whomever said, his coach or whoever is sort of handling things, said he won't go to college if he has to go through the whole Shake Diallo type thing. And I think that honestly, if that happens, you know, if that's the case, if they think that there's trouble like that on the horizon, then I'm not sure we see him anywhere in a uniform.
So I'll close with predictions. What do you think happens on Saturday?
I've just been tossing this around a lot, and I feel like I'm going to sound like the homer when I say I think IU wins. I just they shoot so much better in Assembly Hall than they shoot on the road, and on paper anyway, the thing that Purdue is able to do to mitigate that shooting last year should not work this year, should not be nearly as effective. I'll be honest, I've also kind of, I mean, just because, like, I saw this team in Maui just look abject at times. Mm-hmm. I mean, they lost out there to Wake Forest and UNLV, and then they went to Duke and just got obliterated. And, I mean, they did not play well in East Lansing, but, like, that game in Michigan State was not as, I mean, the Duke game was just an absolute steamrolling. And I keep kind of waiting for that team to show up again, and they haven't really. I mean, they've got three conference losses. They did not play well against Penn State, but apparently they're not alone in that this year.
Yes, Iowa, way to lose to Penn State.
Yeah, that's the strangest set of results I've ever. I think that's the first time in, like, 5 years they beat ranked teams at home, two ranked teams at home in the same season or something like that. I'm hardly going to fault them for the Wisconsin loss, and the Michigan State loss, if at the end of the season it is an anomaly, then I don't think anybody really needs to be concerned about it. But I, like I said, I'm kind of torn between, like, the Indiana that I saw in November that I thought, like, oh, God, this season could really, really go off the rails, and the Indiana that's tied for first in the Big Ten on February 18th. I mean, I would if this game were in Mackey, I'd go with Purdue. Mm-hmm. Narrowly. This game's at Assembly Hall. It's also Saturday night. That place is going to be wound up like crazy.
Yep.
I'm going to go with Indiana. I do not feel confident in that pick at all. But more so because I think Purdue is good, and because there are matchups. There are matchups on both sides that I think, like, as you talked about, it is two teams that kind of do very different things. And I think that whoever kind of wins the matchup or the mismatch, if you want to call it that, wins the game. And I just basically lean to Indiana because Assembly Hall, not unlike Mackey, is good for at least a couple wins a year. You know, I mean, games that maybe Indiana would lose by one, they win by four, just because that place can get so nuts. But neither, the only thing that would really surprise me Saturday is if one team blows the other one out. I think it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be a close game. I think both sides will have some runs. Particularly, I think, at least it's just where they're kind of controlling the pace and the flow of the game. I lean to Indiana purely because it's in Bloomington, but I do not run to Vegas with that prediction.
Does this, if they win, or even just the fact that it's late February and IU is in such a good position to win the title, does that quiet some of the discontent around Tom Crean, or is that just like a ever-present cloud over the program?
You know, I swear to God, I'm not bragging when I say this. I just, like, it's the best illustration of it that I can think of. I did 8 radio spots the day of and after the Iowa game, just because of the impact of that game and the interest and everything. And literally every one of those 8, like, I think one was in Bloomington, 2 were in Indy, 1 was in Fort Wayne, 2 were in Iowa, 1 was in Lansing. Everybody asked me that question in some form, and what I said is what I've believed all season, which is that I think Tom Crean is probably a better coach than his fans give him credit for. At the same time, I also think that they need some tough convincing at this point, and you don't do that till March. Now, all of this is important because, you know, I mean, I think it was the old Bob Knight, you need to get in position to get in position, or you need to be in position to be in position. That's what they're doing right now. And you can't win the Big Ten title in March without winning games like Iowa and Purdue and Maryland, and Maryland's in March, but games like Iowa and Purdue in February. So I think he is certainly positioning himself to have that opportunity. But I don't think there's any win in February that, I mean, ultimately, I don't think any reasonable IU fan would say Tom Crean can't recruit well and develop players well and win games. Like, I mean, the man's done that his entire career.
The record speaks for itself in that regard.
Yeah, but Indiana fans, whether it's realistic or fair or not, are going to have the highest expectations possible for their program, and that is something that Crean has not reached really yet in their minds. And so I think a Big Ten title in March, a deep NCAA tournament run in March, yeah, those things, I mean, they should earn him some quiet, frankly. He would deserve it if he did those things, even in a weak Big Ten. You win the Big Ten, don't really care what the league looks like. This isn't the Southland Conference. Like, you're still playing good teams. But like I said, what I've always said, what I've always thought is, unless, I mean, if they were 27-0 today, then yeah, no, nobody'd be talking. But ultimately, it was always about what this team did in March, whether it's a conference title, conference tournament run, NCAA tournament run. That's what's going to really convince people. And I think it's, for all the noise and the bluster after Duke and all the feel-good factor after Iowa, I think that's always been the case.
Well, thank you very much for lowering your standards enough to come on our podcast.
No, thanks for having me. That was a blast. It's always fun to talk hoops. I mean, I feel like I just sit here talking to myself all day this time of year, just trying to work out scenarios and figure out what the hell's going on in college. This year, more than any other, my AP Top 25 ballots have just been a disaster.
Well, we really appreciated having you on. I feel like my wife is sick of hearing me talk about basketball, so it's always good to talk to somebody.
My wife, yeah, she doesn't care.
Yeah, but this is IU week. I mean, this is IU week. It's Purdue IU week. It's different.